Before we get going, here's the bit where I remind you that nothing we discussed should be considered as investment advice. This conversation is for informational and hopefully entertainment purposes only. So while we hope you find it both informative and entertaining, please do your own research or speak to a financial advisor before putting a dime of your money into these crazy markets. You're about to listen to a special preview edition of This Week in Doom, featuring my very special guest, the great green chicken himself, Doomberg. He and I are about to sit down and discuss the war in Ukraine, which will no doubt agitate and energize listeners on both sides of the debate in equal measure. And for good measure, we're going to dive into the idea, or otherwise, of peak cheap oil. So there really will be something in this conversation for everybody to get agitated and upset about. Every episode of the Grant Williams podcast, including The Endgame, The Super Terrific Happy Hour, The Narrative Game, This Week in Doom, Shifts Happen, and the new series Chaos Theory, is available to Copper and Silver Tier subscribers at my website, grant-williams.com. Copper Tier subscribers get access to all the podcasts, while members of the Silver Tier get both the podcasts and my monthly newsletter, Things That Make You Go, Hmm. So, if you enjoy what you hear on the show and you want more high-quality content like it, please make your way over to grant-williams.com and join our exciting community today. And now, on with the show. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of This Week in Doom. Joining me, as always, bringing the heat and the doom, is the green chicken himself, Doomberg. Hello, my friend. How the devil are things in the coop?
Grant Williams, great to see you again. I see that you are in Cayman, judging by the backdrop. And it's been too long, my friend. I know we chat on a regular basis outside of this podcast, but I feel like it's been, well, there's always so much to talk about, so I suppose we could do a daily podcast if we really needed to.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Today in Doom might be just a bit too much Doom for people, I reckon. but you're right. I mean, there is so much going on in the world right now. And yeah, as you said, we do chat off mic, and one of those conversations led to the idea that it might be time to record another podcast based on some of the things you've been looking at and digging into. It seemed like a sensible idea to let other people eavesdrop on this conversation rather than me hog you all to myself.
Yes, and also some of the things you've written have certainly come to fruition here.
Yeah, sadly.
I'm sure we'll get into those as well.
Let's begin, and let's start with one of the subjects that you haven't published about just yet, but I know you've been doing a lot of work on, and that is the ongoing conflict in Europe between Russia and Ukraine. So I'll hand the floor over to you, and this will, I'm sure, come back to a couple of those pieces of mine that you talked about. But let's dive in with what you found out and what you're thinking about the whole thing at the moment.
So I should say up front that I am not a military expert by any means. And yes, I have gone down the rabbit hole of open source intelligence around what's actually going on in the ground to the extent that one can learn such things, you know, from the safe distance over here in the West that we pleasantly sit in. And the reason I was inspired to do that was because, you know, we made this call on sanctions early on, and it was very clear to us that not only would the sanctions not work, but they would backfire. And they have. I mean, I think we were stone cold right. It's one of the calls that we've made that I'm most proud of that required a bit of, courage is the wrong word because there's nothing courageous about writing a blog, but we put those posts out and you and I talked about it, and even Luke Roman as well, at a time where that was a relatively unpopular opinion. The propaganda around the destruction of the Russian economy was palpable. It was thick. And we stood against that propaganda, and I'm proud of that call. And then, of course, we've also, I think, correctly identified the major flaw and the weakness of the Western energy policy in particular, and European energy policy, specifically Germany, of course, zeroing in even further. And it occurred to me that the same architects of those two obviously failed policies that were predictable by us just happen to be in areas that we know about. What about the military situation? It's the same people that are making the strategic decisions around the military situation vis-a-vis Putin, you know, the Minsk agreement and whether or not we should negotiate and whether we could win a war, you know, a proxy war, funding and supplying weapons from afar like we've been trying to do for the past 2 years. And it occurred to me that the very same architects of those decisions are in charge of the military strategy. And why would I assume there's competence over there just because I don't know anything about the underlying situation? And so I just started digging for my own curiosity. I doubt we'll ever write about it. It's just not what people come to Doomberg to read about. But I started going down the rabbit hole of these mappers, and I'm not sure.
Well, hang on, right? Let me just stop you there for 1 second before we do. And I think this is an important context for people listening to this who may not have read your earlier pieces. Just before we get into the mappers and your journey down the rabbit hole, let's go back to those sanctions and explain just quickly why you thought they would fail and what you thought the weak points were. Because I think that's useful information to have.
Anybody who's spent 5 minutes in the commodity sector knows you make all your money on price. And the entire architecture of the Western sanctions against Russia, which is a major, really critical supplier of commodities in the export market, far bigger role than most countries play in that space because they produce way more critical energy and related commodities than they consume domestically. There's no way that you can sanction a critical supplier by attacking their volume and not have them more than make it up in price. And so, as we talked about in the earliest piece we wrote, which just came out weeks after the sanctions called Crazy Pills, let's just imagine we were able to cut 50% of Putin's volume from the global markets. Well, the price of those commodities would weigh more than double, and he would end up with more revenue, not less. And we have since argued, to prove a point, that the U.S. Navy should be escorting Russian oil tankers to make sure that every drop of oil that he produces finds its way to the global markets with the least amount of friction possible, because we want to flood the world with commodities and drive the price down. And if we had driven the price down to $20 a barrel, he would not be making near as much money as he has made, and he would not have the resources to fund the enormous war machine that he appears to have been able to build in the past 2 years, and would not be in a position to basically be dictating terms on the ground, as we'll get into. So that sounds counterintuitive. But the inelasticity of demand of commodities is such that reducing their supply causes enormous spikes in price. And anything we do that adds friction to the global commodity markets makes Putin more money. And anything we do that reduces friction to the commodity markets and crashes the price crushes his ability to fund his war machine. And from the beginning, we've made this mistake. We are trying to sanction volume when we know mathematically it will be more than made up for on price. When you're in the commodity sector, you know, I did a lot of work in the commodity sector, grew up in it, did some consulting when we launched our firm with major mining companies and so on. You know, they spend all this money and they just wait. And every 5 years, they make 10 years worth of money. And then high prices brings on new supply and then everybody waits again. And they just tread water most of the time, which is why, of course, Wall Street doesn't like it. It's lumpy. But, you know, I don't think that mining companies and commodity companies generally should be publicly traded, because it's far better to be in private hands. But that's a conversation for another day. But everybody in the commodity sector knows that you make money when things are tight and you tread water the rest of the time. So, for example, let's say refining is super tight and the U.S. refinery network is running at 95% capacity and diesel is $5 a gallon and gasoline is $4.50 nationwide, $10 in California, of course, because that's what communists do. If I own 8 refineries and one of them blows up, I'm going to make way more money than if I just kept all 8 running, because the other 7 are going to more than make it up on price. That's just the nature of commodities. And so our entire architecture is ass backwards. It's literally designed to backfail. The more effective the sanctions are at limiting his volume, the more revenue he will make, period. So it's just that simple. So it's counterintuitive. You have to have been in the industry viscerally to understand it. You have to have been responsible for a P&L during an energy shortage to realize, like, wow, actually, this is pretty profitable for us. Just look at corn and soybean and the grains. They're in the tank right now. It's as bearish as it can be. Why? Because natural gas is $2 per million BTU in the U.S. They're derivatives of energy, and you make your money during energy shortages as a derivative of energy. And it's just frustrating. I've had scores of people from industry email us supporting those pieces when we wrote them. Lots of people in the oil and gas sector are more than happy with the sanctions policy, by the way, because they're making record profits. They make their money when the price is high. And $100 a barrel of oil or $80 a barrel of oil that we see today, that's fantastic for these players. They're more than happy to have the frictions in the market because they know that's when they make their money. And so we had talked about this before in a prior podcast, but let's just go back and look and see what James Baker did for the first Gulf War, right? So Saddam Hussein invades Kuwait. What's the first thing Baker does? Tours the Middle East and bends on all of our allies in the Middle East to artificially pump as hard as they can up until the point where we inject the Iraqi army out of Kuwait. They knew what the price of oil meant. And so they wanted to flood the markets. We should have done the same thing here. And I I believe that the vast majority of CEOs of Western oil and gas companies are patriotic people who love the country and would probably take one for the team if Biden had asked. And if he had just signaled that this was his intent, we're going to open the spigots on the SPR, we're going to support the oil and gas sector, we're going to, you know, supplement their income a little bit with some handouts. God knows we hand out money for wind and solar and batteries and all other hydrogen boondoggles all the time. It wouldn't have taken much. And we would have temporarily driven the price of oil down until we got ourselves situated with Ukraine. We didn't do that. So that's, in a nutshell, our view on the sanctions policy. And same thing on energy, of course, you know, wind and solar and shutting down your nuclear power plants and tying yourself to cheap Russian gas, which gave them all the leverage. So the reason I went down the military rabbit hole is because it's the same people. It's the Macrons of the world. It's the Lord Camerons of the world. It's the same clowns, really, is the only word that, you know, the arrogant, know-it-all elites who have never actually had to wash their hands because they did any work in charge of the military strategy. Look, military, God bless them, they follow orders, right? Your military is only as effective as your commander-in-chief. And if you insist on putting the military in bad situations, there's not much they can do except sacrifice themselves, which is very tragic. And so the collective committee of G7 leaders, and nothing good comes from a committee, was the inspiration for me to just, at least for my own interest, let me just spend 200 hours going down this rabbit hole, which I've done. So it's sort of an in-between writing these pieces for Doomberg.
Okay, so we'll go down that rabbit hole with you in a second, but I just want to come back to this change in policy by the leaders and just kick that around for a second, because this is the bit that when you wrote those pieces, I didn't understand, and I don't understand it now, is that what is the change that has led to the modern day leadership cabal making decisions which are completely antithetical to the goals they're trying to achieve, particularly when they have similar and almost identical real world examples within their lifetimes to examine? The full conversation is available to subscribers to the copper and silver tiers of my website, grant-williams.com. Nothing we discussed should be considered as investment advice. This conversation is for informational and hopefully entertainment purposes only. So while we hope you find it both informative and entertaining, please do your own research or speak to a financial advisor before putting a dime of your money into these crazy markets.